Chapter 41. The Family. Section A. The Nature of Marriage. The most basic community in civil society is the family. See Chapter 33, Section C. The natural school for citizenry, where everyone can learn to love the common good in the right order, i.e., love of God and love of neighbor. How is the family constituted? Let us look at the causes of it, metaphysical analysis. What brings the family together? The efficient causes that make a family are a man and a woman brought together by their mutual love. But as we know, see chapter 18, section F, the efficient cause does not act without an end or final cause. And what is the end or purpose of the union of husband and wife? The primary end, finis operis, see chapter 39, section B, of this union is the procreation and education of children. Without the education or upbringing of the children as an end, it would be like animal mating. A temporary union would not guarantee this upbringing, and therefore the union has to be for life. The material causes of marriage are the bodies of the spouses as originators of human life. They give themselves to each other and thereby acquire a right to each other's body. They no longer belong to themselves, so to speak, but to each other. And the formal cause, or what makes the union a marriage, is the mutual consent to accept each other as husband and wife, outwardly and publicly manifested, and made for life. As we said, the family is a natural society, since it is natural for men and women to be attached to each other. The purpose of the family is the propagation of the human species. This is a common good proper to human nature. See chapter 37, section A. As such, therefore, it is a natural institution common to all peoples regardless of religion or culture, and God is the author of it as creator of human nature. However, as Christians, we know that God has raised this natural institution to the dignity of a sacrament, i.e., a means of communicating divine life. Since it is a human society, what brings it about, as we have seen, is a spiritual act, namely a deliberate act of the will. What is consummated by the union of the bodies is what they have already brought about by their mutual acceptance. By being raised to a sacrament for Christians, and since grace does not destroy nature but perfects it, all the natural elements of marriage remain in the Christian marriage. All the properties and laws of marriage are valid for all men, not just for Christians. In order to understand the nature of marriage, it is useful to look at the difference between men and animals, to see what is distinctive in man. We observe that animals also have sexual union for the generation of their offspring. There must be something, therefore, that makes the difference in the case of man, which is not precisely the sexual union, but something of a spiritual nature. That is why the purpose of marriage is not only the begetting and bodily survival of the offspring, this applies to animals too, but the complete education or upbringing of the children towards virtue, whereby they can reach God as last end. This is then the true purpose of marriage. And the efficient cause of marriage cannot be motivated by the passion engendered by physical attraction, because this is what is proper to animals. It is also natural for men and women to feel a physical attraction, although this cannot be the cause of marriage. It has to be a free choice in order for it to be human. Reason and will have to enter into it. The properties of the family, or domestic society, are therefore 1. Unity, i.e. one man and one woman, and 2. Indissolubility, both of which are spiritual goods or values not to be found in animals, as they have no sense of permanence, and their sexual unions do not go beyond mere mating. Thus, in the spiritual differences, we observe in marriage, as compared with animal mating, man achieves the transmission of physical life as ennobled by reason of his spiritual nature. And we can see why, if marriage is not lived in this spiritual context, but only as mere animal mating, it makes those who fall into this degradation become like animals. There is probably nothing that brutalizes man more than using sex outside the context of marriage. To the extent that materialism prevails, there is a tendency to reduce married life to sex, i.e., to the aspects of generation only, and to a kind of sex for its own sake, since it is not open to the transmission of life. But this injures the very specific common good of marriage, which, as we have seen, is for the sake of human life. Section B. The Common Good of the Family. The begetting and upbringing of children is specific to the human species. It happens sometimes, however, that no children are born, with no fault on the part of the spouses. To be more precise, therefore, we have to distinguish the primary from the secondary purpose of marriage. Thus far, we have spoken of the primary one, begetting and upbringing of children, but the secondary purpose comprises all the other ends which can and should be achieved by marriage, but all subordinated to the primary one. These secondary ends can be summarized as the mutual help and companionship between husband and wife. But the primary purpose is what marriage is essentially for. Now, companionship and mutual help can be achieved outside marriage. Example, in the relationship between brothers and sisters. But since the begetting and upbringing of children can be achieved only in marriage, this must be the primary purpose. Therefore, all the good of domestic society, of all the actions of the family, depend on their ordination to the real common good of the family, which is the good of the offspring. Thus, in all decisions of husband and wife, the first consideration must always be the good of the children. Example, when deciding whether or not to emigrate. And the mutual love and friendship of husband and wife must be for the sake of the children. Otherwise, it will not be a right love and friendship. This is why every sexual act which is deliberately deprived of its function of generation goes directly against the common good of the family and is therefore intrinsically evil. Lastly, due to this common good of the family, which is the children, the human species is propagated with order only within marriage, because only within marriage can they be properly brought up and be ordained to the common good of the society. Section C. Fundamental Properties of Marriage. The unity and indissolubility of marriage, which we have already mentioned, flows as properties from the common good of the family. The good of the children, thus belonging to the natural law, they are valid for all men, regardless of religion or culture, although they have been confirmed by the divine positive law of God. They are not peculiar to the sacrament of marriage for Christians, but belong also to the natural contract common to all peoples. 1. Indissolubility. Here, the good of the offspring is the first consideration. A dissoluble marriage would threaten it by jeopardizing the education of the children. But even when the children have grown up and no longer need education, the good of marriage would be in danger by the damage to the relationship of filiation and parenthood, which is one of the deepest relationships among men. The second consideration is the matter of justice. The rights acquired in marriage would be injured by the dissolution of the contract. The third consideration is the unique friendship that exists in marriage, whose sign is the spontaneous feeling that married love is exclusive and forever, enshrined in all folklores and literatures as one more manifestation of what is permanent in human nature. It has always and everywhere been felt that, while indissolubility and marital fidelity are values, goods, divorce and marital infidelities are countervalues, evils, and it is values that should animate and guide cultures, institutions, and laws in order to pursue the common good. Fourthly, by knowing that they are united inseparably, husband and wife love each other more faithfully, consciously and willingly, and this helps them to take better care of domestic matters and feel more responsible for their household, which would be endangered by the sense of insecurity and the lack of mutual trust deriving from the possibility of dissolving the marriage bond. 2. Unity. This means that it is exclusive, i.e., of one with one. The matrimonial bond excludes polygamy. Here again, the first consideration is the good of the children. For their education, they need the complementarity of father and mother, the head and the heart, so to speak, of the family. Children need both affection and discipline. As the family is a society, it needs a government which corresponds naturally to the parents in relation to the children. They complement each other in this task, and this partnership would be upset by a third or fourth party. Besides, polygamy degrades the woman who has to share a man with other women. It makes the female sex inferior in practice, which is contrary to the essential equality of the sexes, and is a source of enmity and strife. Notwithstanding the deluge of rationalizing on this score throughout the centuries, divorce and polygamy remain the social plagues always threatening or undermining civilizations. Section D. Marriage and celibacy. It is clear that the attraction between men and women and their union in families is natural. Marriage is necessary for the survival of the human species. It does not, however, follow that it is necessary for every individual. It is necessary for men to cultivate the land, for example, in order to produce food, but it is not necessary for all to be farmers. As a matter of fact, if the common good can be served and pursued directly, without the mediation of marriage, a human love that should lead to God, or if perpetual celibacy is for the sake of God, the common good transcending society, it is in itself a more excellent way than marriage. See chapter 32, section C, and chapter 37, section H, as well as from Matthew, chapter 19, verses 10 to 12. Physical parenthood, however noble it may be, is not the greatest perfection of man, since it corresponds to his material part. To be sure, human generation is the highest type of becoming proper to corruptible beings. Spiritual substances are generated, though not materially, they are directly created by God. See chapter 31, section D. When man generates, he transmits only a body, because the soul is directly created by God. This is why it is so evil to deprive the conjugal act of its natural end, as it amounts to preventing God from creating a human soul. This means that there is such a thing as spiritual parenthood, which is not a generation in the material sense. It is a well-known fact in the Christian context. I have begotten you, writes St. Paul to the Corinthians. See 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 15. The first point in the chapter on the glory of God in Escriva's The Way mentions it. Many deprive themselves of children for the sake of his glory, and they have thousands of children of their spirit. Number 779. This celibacy for the sake of God makes the love of God in the celibate person exclusive, like the love in marriage between husband and wife, with an undividedness superior to that of marriage, since it is more related to God. Since the human will is spiritual, to make it exclusive for the love of God is something superior, as long as this love is total and undivided as well as orderly. See chapter 23, section D and E, chapter 37, section C, and chapter 40, section B. And this superiority is naturally prolonged into the other life, if the last end is reached,